Hello, everyone. This is 90.5 The Flavor Station, and welcome to Maximum Potential, your health and wellness podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Bacon, and today's topic will be focus. I chose this topic because a lot of us students have finals coming up, tests coming up, and talking about the topic of focus will help a lot of kids work smarter and not harder when preparing for the test. So with that being said, I'm happy to welcome Professor Jaden Knox to the table today. He is a psychology professor here at Florida A&M University, and he has a bachelor's degree in psychology and a master's degree in community psychology, and he's an amazing professor overall. So I'm glad to have him here today.
Thank you for having me.
Let's get started. So, Professor, the first question that I wanted to ask is, from a psychologist's point of view, what is focus? When you guys think about the word focus, how do you guys interpret it?
When I think about the word focus, from a psychological standpoint, I think about the motivation behind it, right? Because with everything focus regarded, we have our motivation to do what we put our focus for, right? And then that comes with the effort. So motivated behaviors, the motivation, the emotion attached to that motivation behavior, and the effort that's applied to it. So for example, musicians, their focus is on becoming a better musician, right? So already the focus, when we break it down to, I said, their motivation is to become a better musician. That motivates them to practice, right? Practice, go over music theory, music literature, and the emotion attached to it is more like an excitement type thing. Like, depending on the individual, but most people are excited to go up that upper level, right? The excitement you get is like, okay, now I see myself improving through time.
Totally.
So that emotion comes with the, you know, motivated behavior, and then the effort, right? You can put minimal effort or maximum effort. And that effort really is a big factor when it comes to the outcome of the level of focus that's being applied to whatever you're doing.
Okay, so what I'm getting at is basically when you have a goal in mind, a goal that you want to achieve, or just something that you want to be better at, just seeing the process of improvement towards that goal is kind of what drives focus and or drives focus to be better over time. When you're seeing improvement in what you're practicing, that basically increases, you said, motivated focus, or
like the motivation behind it.
Okay.
So, well, we can do another example. A student, right? A student, you know, their drive is to do well on the final exam, right? In order for them to do well, they think of multiple ways to achieve that goal. So one of the ways they do is studying. That emotion is tied to, I want to do well. How can I get to that route? Now I'm motivated to study, right? And then the studying process, that's where the effort comes in. How you study, right? The studying process of, you know, are you going to study strictly just focusing on this, right? Or is there going to be like different distractions applied to studying? People study in different ways, and it's up to the individual to figure out what is their perfect studying strategy, right? One might study in a visualization way, while one study in an oral way. They rather hear things. But that attaches to the effort, right? So the motivation and then the emotion, right? When we tie the emotion, this final grade could be like their make it or break it in this class. So their emotion is very, you know, heavy right now to like, ooh, I need to, you know, pass this final exam or else I'm going to fail. And so that's also a motivating factor that plays into how much they are willing to put into whatever they want to focus on, right? Because focus can change in different levels. You know, we always say, you know, people lack focus, right? And in other words, when we say people lack focus, they like lack that commitment to maintain attention to a certain thing and put in that work and effort applied to it.
Right. And this kind of brings up another question I wanted to ask. I know earlier we were talking about how individuals, how focus is a very individualized thing.
Yeah.
A lot of people, it really depends on the person, on the ways that they focus and how well they focus. So I want to talk about focus and its association with music.
Yeah.
Because I know a lot of us, when we, when people go to the gym trying to focus on a workout, they have music on most of the time. And when a lot of people are studying, they have music on to focus. And I just kind of want to know, because I think this is a very interesting topic, of what the association of music is with focus.
The association with music does vary on the individual. I will say music is like a, it can affect the mood, right? That's why, for example, the gym, right? You put on some upbeat type music, right? Your sensories and all that is taking in that music, and it can also change the mood. Also, there's a dopamine type of effect to it, right? Some people find music to be very stress relieving, right? Or soothing, and they get that dopamine type of effect, which can also, you know, affect their emotions, affect how they behave, right? Think about when, you know, people go to a club, right? There might be one song and they're just not feeling it. They don't want to dance. And then a certain song comes on. Now they just got a boost of energy and things like that. It's like, oh, let me go hit the dance floor and stuff. Now they start dancing. But a second ago, you was just in the corner just bopping your head, right? Music plays such a good role when it comes to focus. And it's kind of like up and down, because then music can also be a bad factor, right? Some people who tend to have difficulties with like focusing on one topic try to add that music as another sense of like, if I apply music, I'll be able to focus more, right? Because of that whole mood stabilizer and things like that. But then sometimes we can get too attached to the music while doing it, right? Notice how sometimes you're studying and then the melody of the music start playing, so you start humming the melody,
right? Things like that, right?
Already you're splitting the effort when it comes to the focusing, right? But at the same time, you're also forming association. Because if you start humming that melody in your head while reading the material, you know, that melody can help you remember stuff when you're, like, retrieving stuff from your storage and stuff like that. It's like, oh, I remember 2 + 2 = 4, right? And let's just say somebody don't know that, right? But then they get that humming in that head. They're like, no, 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 no. And then 2 + 2 = 4, boom, right? So people like to do those associations. That's why it's also, for example, might kind of a little bit off, but like, you know, driving, for example, right?
When
we gotta focus on driving and stuff like that. But they also say for you to become, you know, exceptional driver, sometimes it's good to practice in the car you're gonna be driving in, right? And so we use music as the auditorial. Now we're talking about the environmental factors that comes into focus too, right?
Right.
And relating to the focus, you know how some people be like, oh, I can focus on a very quiet room, while there's some people who can't focus on a very quiet room. And that might happen because they got so much things in their mind that they need music to help, you know, calm them down in a sense of the way, or just help elevate that focus so they're not thinking about all of the other things, right? Because all in their head, what they're getting from an auditorial sense is the music while they're visualizing, you know, what they're looking at. So it's a lot of factors. But back, circling back, segue a little bit. Music, the association with it can vary on the individual, and we gotta talk about the different types of music, right? A lot of people go towards jazz, right, as that soothing feel. Some people might not operate like that, right? They might need more upbeat, which jazz has upbeat and stuff like that, but majority will go to jazz for like the soothing, right? Some people might play rap to get that upbeat feel, or R&B music to smooth out, or rock and roll. It depends on the individual and how they want to associate that music with it. Again, it has this distraction factors in it too. You might be too involved with the music, and then now your focus is on the music instead of what you're trying to study for the exam.
Right. And that's very interesting, because I know specifically when I was in my anatomy class in high school, like, and some of my other teachers said this, they were like, you gotta, when you study, you gotta listen to music with no lyrics, and it's gotta be soft, and it's gotta have no lyrics. And I think it's interesting that you said that it's really adaptable. Like, people, like, if people study for a long enough time with music, they could be studying with, like, rock and roll on. But if they adjust their mind to be able to study with that on for a long enough time, then they can study perfectly fine with that type of music on. But it's just how you adjust to it. So I think that for most of us, it is like music without lyrics, because we've all been conditioned in a way to study with that. But I do know, like, sometimes I am studying with, like, lo-fi, smooth jazz, and then I start to get sleepy, and then I got to put on my rap and stuff like that to just wake me back up. And I've actually just been getting adjusted to different types of music, because listening to lo-fi actually does get me tired. But to move on, I want to talk more about the conditioning aspect.
Yeah.
So I basically formulated an example in my head of how conditioning your focus would work. So I was thinking, like, imagine this guy in his office.
Yeah.
And it's this really busy office all the time. You got your phone calls. You got people talking all around you. You got, like, your noisy coworkers and stuff like that. And this person, usually they bring their headphones to, it could be the cubicle, it could be wherever the office space is, but they bring noise-canceling headphones, and then they put it on their head, and it allows them to completely focus on their task. But if they maybe forget it one day, they're going to go to the job, and it's going to be super distracting. Like, if they don't have those headphones, it's going to be really distracting, because they're going to be back with all that noise and all those distractions. But say that they decide, okay, well, let me not bring the headphones for about a month or whatever time I want to adjust to the normal state of the office. They don't bring their headphones. And in about a month or so, they would basically get used to all the noise and the distractions, what used to be distractions, and they'd be able to focus better on their tasks without needing those headphones to basically tune out everything, because they've trained their brain to be able to focus with the surrounding sounds.
Yeah, that's a good example. That's conditioning and sensory adaptation all the way. You know, at first, you know, we're just like, oh, we can't function without it. And if you think about it, that's how a lot of things start off, right? Yeah. Especially when we want to break certain habits and stuff, we got to start conditioning. That's where the effort comes in, right? How much effort and emotion is attached to it. That person had a drive to, you know, and had a realization that, dang, without these headphones, I can't really function in the office and get work done. I got to learn how to operate, you know, 4 days like that so I don't, you know, be stuck. And so conditioning and then learning how to change your optimal level, right? It's like when we go into a room, we go from a quiet room like this to a very loud room, right?
Right. But
people are already in that loud room. The people that's already in that loud room, they don't see it being as loud compared to us going into that room. But then we adjust to it. And then later on, we're just like, you know what? This is not that bad. It's not as loud as I thought when I was, you know, before. So that's basically all it is. We're adapting and conditioning ourselves to, you know, operate in that optimal level to where we're comfortable and then we can function. And yeah, that's a good example. That's a good example you formulated.
Yeah, I don't know how that example came to be, but I just find, like, conditioning to be like something that a lot of people could be more mindful of. Because a lot of people, like, say they're bad at something, like, oh, I'm bad at doing math, or just some generic example, and they just think that their brain is, like, formulated that way of, like, I'm not going to be able to focus with this, or I'm bad at this while this is happening. And it's like, no, like, you, if you train your brain to focus the way you want it to focus, then anything's really possible. I know I was in track, and I used to do all my practice runs with music on, and it got to a point where I was like, I can only run with music on. Because without the music, because when we're doing our actual race, we don't have music.
Yeah.
So I got too dependent on the music. And I was like, man, I can only run this fast with my music on. And then I had to realize, like, I have to train my mind to not be like that. Because in the actual race, we don't have that.
Yeah.
So I started practicing just running. I started not going too far without the music. So I did my long runs with the music on and my short runs in the neighborhood without the music. And then it developed to my longer runs being without the music. And it made me into a much better runner. And then it made me realize, like, oh man, I just trained my brain to like not need that. And then I was also more appreciative of just like the normal, like of like nature itself, and just the sounds without my headphones on. So I just want everyone to know who's watching that being able to train your brain, you could always train your brain to become better at something that you don't think you can become better at. And I have another question. This mm-hmm. isn't really related, but I know a lot of people on campus, they don't get a lot of sleep.
Yeah.
And I was gonna ask like two or three things that can help our focus with everybody, but sleep is really like the center. And I know a lot of people don't get it. So I wanna know from your point of view, how much sleep matters when trying to focus in a day.
I kind of get like mixed feelings about sleep, because I look back at my time during grad school when I was getting my master's, I was going off like 5 hours of sleep, like daily. But what helped though is I would take like a nap during the day. So that would be like, I'll take a nap before my evening class. So right. Like I'm fresh and stuff for class and I'm able to focus. Sleep can vary on an individual. I've seen people who operate off 3 hours of sleep, right? And then sometimes you get that effect of, you know, random adrenaline, because your body got to push in more energy and stuff from the lack of sleep. And that can boost their focus, actually, sometimes. It can boost it or just deplete it, depending on what they're doing and the function, and also, you know, how they are physically and stuff like that. But sleep is very important, right? We talk about sleep as, you know, restoring and recovering the body. We need that sleep. And it's a reset. It's a reset, you know? That's why I take naps. That's why I was taking them naps and stuff like that in grad school. But sleep, depending on, because I know they talk about, oh, you need 7 to 8 hours of sleep.
Yeah.
But in a realistic world, it's, not everybody is consistently getting 7 to 8 hours of sleep, right? It varies. As long as you get, you know, a good amount of sleep, which to me personally, I think like if you can get 5 uninterrupted like hours of sleep, you can do decent. You can do pretty good, right? I'm just speaking for me. People might be like, oh, you need all the sleep in the world. Because, you know, that's why it's important for when we're young to get all the sleep, because all the development that happens physically and mentally. You know, we talk about cognitive development, how they process things. That all comes with sleep, right, in the endocrine system. But sleep, to just give a brief answer, it's kind of hard for me, because, like, I think I see it as a very individual thing. Like I said, I've seen some people operate so good with, like, 3 hours of sleep. And I look at me, I'm just like, if I get 3 hours of sleep, I don't know how I'm going to manage throughout the day, right? And you didn't take a nap too? Now I'm really impressed, right? So it depends on how the individual, because again, when we talk about conditioning, some people can learn how to condition with just quick sleep, right? Just like I get an hour in,
right,
boom. I get an hour in right here, boom. I'm able to do this for like the next time. And we've been, I'm not speaking on everybody, but, you know, a good amount of people have been trained to, you know, not even train, but like, you know, we got bedtimes, right?
Right.
We like go to bed at 8 p.m. Or 9 p.m. And then, you know, after a while, you're like, it is what it is.
Yeah, now it's definitely different.
Now it's different. We have more control.
Yeah, then,
you know, when you leave your parents, you know, because like that bedtime, for me, my parents like kept like a straight, like, you should be like getting ready for bed.
Yeah, my parents.
You know, like around 8, 9 p.m., they'll be like, turn off the lights, turn off the game. And stuff like that. And as we get older, we get more freedom with that,
you know,
depending, you know, how well we're doing. I noticed, like, the times I would go to sleep would be, like, around 11, 12. And then at college, it definitely varies because there's so much things happening. You end up going to sleep, like, around 2 a.m., 3 a.m. And then having to wake up for your 8 a.m. class.
Exactly.
And things like that, you know. And to me, I always say, if you're able to get that nap in, get that nap.
Yeah.
And that's why I was doing my undergrad. After my morning classes, get that nap in, you start feeling a whole new boost of energy, right? You get that nap in, you're like, okay, I can focus on this, I can focus on that, instead of feeling sluggish throughout the day.
Right.
Because your performance is going to drop as the day goes on. That's why I say naps are important. You know, some people are like, oh, it's bad to take naps because it's going to change your sleep schedule, which, you know, in some cases it could be true. Right? You take a nap during the middle of the day, then you're awake more throughout nighttime, but you're still functioning, right?
Yeah.
At a very, you know, high or mid-tier type performance level. So sleep, it varies on, you know, you got to know yourself. You got to know yourself, right? Am I capable of operating if I just go 4 hours of sleep, right? Am I capable of operating with 3 hours of sleep? And if you got to operate 3 hours of sleep, how can you get some of that sleep back in a sense? Like, can I take a nap during this day? You got to plan it out. You got to plan it out.
Okay.
So that's how I see sleep is about knowing how you are able to function, right? I can't make a general basis on like, oh, you should get this much.
Exactly.
Because we all operate different. I can't do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I could attest to that because I know like it took me forever to find my optimal schedule.
Yeah.
Because my parents also had me on a, like, it was like they had me on a curfew. So it was like after 11 o'clock, it was like, yeah, lights off, we're not doing anything. But now it's my friends like to, like, you know, I usually do a lot of my work in the morning and in the evening, and then nighttime for me is like chill with friends and stuff. So my sleep schedule got pushed. So just adapting, like just knowing what your schedule is gonna be, especially when you're independent, is very important. Cause if you don't know what your, if you don't have some sense of a schedule, cause I tell my friends, like, I'm like, okay, it's getting that time. Like, I still know when I'm wanting to go to sleep. So just knowing and being aware of, like, okay, the consequences of, okay, I know I'm going past my schedule. So I know that tomorrow morning in my 8 a.m. class, I'm going to be tired because I'm going outside of my schedule. Like, just knowing the consequences if you do disrupt your schedule. And yeah, just staying on a good sleep schedule is very important. I want to leave you with two final questions, and it's not related to focus, but I think it's interesting. It's just interesting questions that some people would want to know. And my first one is, what is the worst advice that you've had, that you've heard somebody give on psychology? Like the worst advice.
On like anything regarding psychology?
Yeah, like pseudoscience, like anything regarding psychology.
Yeah, I gotta think of a lot. No, because that's a very unique question when it comes to like psychology aspect. I've been reading this book and It's just the first thing that came to my mind. You know the statement, like, everybody has trauma, right? In a sense, I think people get confused with somebody having a trauma response compared to somebody actually having trauma, because then it leaves, like, no distinction between people who have PTSD, right, and actually has those abnormalities and things like that compared to somebody, you know, they went through an event and had a trauma response. But that doesn't, you know, essentially mean that they had trauma, like, or develop a trauma, right? And so as I read that, I'm just like, you know, because you go online and, you know, you have all these people that talk about, you know, mental health literacy and stuff like that. I think it's just something to dive into. Same thing with, like, ADHD, right? People be like, oh, I can't focus on this and that, right? Oh, I might have ADHD. And if you see somebody who actually has ADHD, you would take that statement back.
Like, I know for sure.
Yeah. So and you know, a lot of that puts in their head, and it leads to like people being undiagnosed, and they just like, and then they add that label to it, right? They add that label to their life and be like, you know, and then when you ask them, did you actually get tested for your assessment?
Right.
Like, they be like, no, I haven't. So, and then on top of that, people will internalize these type of disorders and things and try to, you know, form a path to where they can handle it, when the whole time it could be something else and you're actually making your symptoms worse,
right,
without even recognizing what's actually going on. So I'm not saying that's like advice, but like those are like some things that I think more people should be aware of, like the difference between having trauma and trauma responses, and the difference between having ADHD and just the simple, you know, aspect of, you know, you got too much in your head,
right,
you know,
yeah,
and not focusing. So apologize if I didn't like really answer the
oh no
advice
you're good
thing. But yeah, those, I'm just going off what I just read recently. Mm-hmm. So yeah
for those watching, there's a difference between having ADHD and being distracted.
Yeah,
and I know this is a thing I've seen a lot of my friends do. Don't, like, if you take an ADHD test online, it's, don't take it seriously.
Don't.
Please, don't. Like, if your doctor tells you you have it, then you have it. But if you take a test and it's saying that you have it, don't take that test. Don't take the results seriously. I know some people do it for just 'cause, but, like, for people who actually, like, think that they have ADHD based off an online test, don't believe that. My final question, which is kind of like the reverse of the question I just asked, is what is the best advice that you've heard somebody give in the field of psychology? It doesn't have to be one specific thing, but it could be like just whatever is the best.
You have more control than you think. That's,
yeah, that is.
You know, don't let those thoughts in your head, you know, control you. Right? We think about, you know, that's one thing I think about when it comes to advice. When people start becoming fully aware of how they can manage what's in here, mm-hmm, and how that gets displayed, people are able to do a bunch of things. We've seen it, you know, throughout time, people reaching that type of, you know, realization, or in this case, self-actualization, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, many people get so caught up in those negative thoughts and then perceive those as reality. And then when reality hits you, you're like, whoa, hold on. Am I thinking about this all different? Right? We have more control of our own selves than we think, right? And with that being said, you know, we always talk about like the neurological disorders and stuff like that, right? And
right,
treatment over time. But if you take that away, right, and just, mm-hmm, look at what we would consider a normal, you know, functioning human being, right? We need to not let those societal norms fully control us, in a sense. And what I mean by that, as in, like, be yourself, right? Be yourself. Don't try to do the whole fit-in thing, because then that's going to cause, like, dissonance between your own values and beliefs and what you're trying to portray, right? You're going to look back, and then you're going to start having eternal warfare,
right?
And then that ruins everything, depending on how the individual takes it. But already, that's a conflict that they're dealing with on their own. But you, at the end of the day, you have more control than you think, right? It all starts from your mind, mm-hmm, your consciousness, the cognitive thoughts that you portray, you know? Because at the end of the day, when you go to sleep, all you have is your thoughts. All you have is your mind, right? And depending on how you go to sleep and what you end the night or day off, it's going to affect you the next day, the next week, the next, mm-hmm, month, throughout the whole year, right? We got to push for more positive thoughts. We can't get so caught up in our own negative thoughts that are formed from something that's not even realistic, right?
I'm gonna leave with a quote that I heard actually yesterday, which is, be yourself because everybody else is taken. You know,
be yourself, man.
Don't lose your identity because of other people.
Say it one more time.
I'm gonna look at y'all too. Don't lose your identity because of other people. Man. Trust me, there's a lot of people who might say a lot about you, but in their mind, they really respect you and they might want some qualities of you, but they're not gonna tell you that.
They're not.
You just never know. You can never read people's minds, so don't try. Just be yourself. And
be the best version of yourself.
Right. This is gonna be corny, but always reach for the max. Your maximum potential. So with that being said, I'd like to close it out here. I'd like to thank my guest, Professor Jaden Knox, for the valuable information. It's definitely going to help a lot of people on campus, whether they're a student or anywhere in life. And so stay blessed.
Stay blessed.
Stay blessed and keep reaching for the maximum potential, like I said. And peace out. Hope to see y'all in the next one.